Welcome to the first episode of Circling Back. I'm Amanda Forgione, the CEO of Morrison here in Atlanta, Georgia. We are going to do something that no one has done before, and that is start a podcast. This is something that the agency has wanted to do for a very long time. We call it Circling Back as a nod to our logo, but also because we believe that circling back on the past and learning from both mistakes and successes is super important. And in honor of our 39th anniversary, we have a very special first episode, and that is the Morrison founder, Bob Morrison. Bob has worked on every kind of campaign for any kind of brand you can probably think of, from Porsche and McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Equifax, Kodak, Samsung, and the list goes on. A few things about Bob that he is super proud of that he doesn't really talk about is how much he's given back to the youth of Atlanta, from sitting on the board of the Atlanta Ronald McDonald House Charities to the board of Marist School, and also coaching NYO football, which is a little league team here in Atlanta, for decades. Bob really has always had a special interest in advancing the development and well-being of kids. We'll talk to Bob today about sort of what made him who he is and how he got to where he is today. So without further ado, I am so excited to present the very first Circling Back podcast with Bob Morrison. Welcome to the very
great to be here.
Very first episode of Circling Back. We are so proud that you are our first podcast because you started all of this. So first and foremost, cheers.
Cheers.
That's how every good meeting starts and ends.
Cheers.
We don't need to tell people what time it is, right?
10 o'clock in the morning.
5 o'clock somewhere. Okay, so I know a lot about what you did before you started Morrison. And there's some crazy jobs that you had. And I thought it would be super interesting to start there and have you just pick a couple of the things that you did that maybe people don't know about or that helped you in some weird way prepare for a job in advertising.
Collectively, they all had an impact on who I am and where I went in life. But I started out wanting to be a professional football player. I weighed 250 pounds and ran a 4.440 and went to Montreal Alouette football camp year after year. And that's what I wanted to do for a living.
And did you?
No, I got I became sane and realized that wasn't going to be possible.
How many concussions?
Fortunately, no concussions. Broken bones and stitches, but no concussions, fortunately. Another thing I did was I was in the militia in Canada. That's the military.
Some crazy offshoot of the actual army?
No, I was part of the Canadian Grenadier Guards, and they are soldiers that wear the tall bearskin caps and red tunics. And I was an NCO, a non-commissioned officer in that army. And
is that why you have a good poker face?
No, I think it's why I'm disciplined, why I'm punctual, why I understand the importance of following orders, why I'm detail-oriented. But I think the thing that prepared me most for the advertising business was having worked in a small design shop and advertising agency as a summer intern, and I was exposed to people who do marketing and advertising for a living, and I was always impressed by how much they knew about a client, a client's market, a client's business, the customer. And it was just fascinating to me how curious they were and how that curiosity came to life in what they said and did. So the communication skills they had, both verbally and in writing, and I said, I can do this.
Sparked a flame.
It did.
All right. That's good. So what was sort of that aha moment in your life? I know you were running an ad agency for someone else. What was the aha moment that really caused you to want to start Morrison? And at the time, it would have been called the Morrison Agency.
It was. I found myself in leadership positions with other advertising agencies for years. But regardless of the role I played, decisions were still made by a leadership team. And I wasn't always in sync with some of those decisions. I had a different point of view on people or clients or values of the agency. And it frustrated me a little bit. And I said, at some point, I want to do this myself, and I want to be the ultimate decision maker on who we hire, what clients we work with, and what business we pitched.
The ultimate independent.
So when the opportunity came along, I jumped at it and started my own business. And then I was able to make all my own decisions.
Good or bad.
Everyone was right.
Did you ever doubt you'd be successful or have any sort of that imposter syndrome?
Absolutely not. I felt I...
Are you serious?
No.
You never doubted?
Never. Not for a minute.
Wow.
Not for a minute.
That's
impressive.
From
the day I started the agency, which was in the basement of my house, I dressed for work in a suit, went down to the basement and sat at a desk and started making phone calls to clients and prospects and people I knew.
So confidence played a big role. Yeah.
And never came up from the basement until 5 o'clock.
One would argue you're still doing that. You're still working at a desk. You may not be dressing in a suit anymore.
Suits are gone by the wayside.
So that confidence led you to be successful fairly quickly. What was a time where you felt like you'd arrived and the agency was officially on the map and you weren't in your basement by yourself anymore?
Well, it was about 12 years after the agency started. I ended up with a full page picture of myself on the front cover of Adweek. We had just beat a lot of other agencies for a big piece of business called Exide Electronics, and people were talking about the Morrison Agency. Shortly thereafter, we were able to hire a world-class creative director in Ron Fisher. And, you know, you make a mark, you stir the pot a little, people take notice, and you start getting people and you start getting clients. But I think in 1999, when I ended up on the front cover of Adweek, that was an aha.
It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
All right, so we didn't mention the age of the agency, but we're going to be celebrating our 39th anniversary, which is a long time. In fact, we say we're the longest standing independent in Atlanta. And over the course of those almost 40 years, we've seen a lot of ups and downs and instability in the industry, but also for the agency. Can you talk about how you manage during times of difficulty, whether that was the dot-bomb era, the recession in 2008, COVID again just in 2020, and potentially in 2025. What do you think is the right way to manage during times of difficulty?
A friend once told me when I started this business, he said, remember one thing, if you're going to be financially successful, hire slowly, fire quickly. Mm. We've done very well with the first part.
Yeah, we don't love to fire.
Where I'm going with that is we don't like to fire.
Yeah, no one does.
Because we're careful about who we hire and because they fit in so well because of the way we go about the hiring process, I have never been quick to terminate anybody, which has been a problem financially at points in our history, but it also means we get to keep the great people, and bouncing back is a whole lot easier. So yeah, we've been able to weather the storms because of the talent that we've had in place and the quality of the people that we all work around.
Yeah.
That's just a fact.
I would add that as the owner of the company, you were always willing to take a salary cut to not have to let someone go, and that especially happened during COVID. So I thought you were going to mention personal sacrifice for success of the company, which I think is part of the scariest bit about owning your own company is that you pay yourself last. So I'll just put that little plug in for you that you did that during COVID, and we were actually able to move through COVID without any layoffs.
That's a price of entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And when you start a business, you've got a responsibility to keep it going. And when you've got people whose livelihoods depend on your business, you want to do everything you can to make it successful. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that.
Let's move on to your day-to-day management style over the years. You have a distinct style. You used to joke with us when we were all in the office that it was MBWA, management by walking around, which I know is a joke. But what would you describe your management and leadership style over the years that helped foster growth in so many people?
I'm glad you put it that way. I think there are two things. I think first and foremost, my style is supportive. Understand what the needs are of the people that are on the team and do what you can to help make them successful. If they're successful, we're going to be successful. Clients are going to be successful. And the other is laissez-faire. Let them do their jobs and don't hover.
Did Mel Robbins steal that from you?
I don't know.
I heard she stole it from someone. Maybe she stole it from you.
To me, it's important that you let people do their thing and give them a chance to spread their wings and give them a chance to grow and grow their careers. I mean, one of the things we've always said at the agency is, if we can't help you grow in your career here, we'll help you find it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And we won't be uncomfortable about doing that because growth is our responsibility, both for clients and for people.
Yeah. I try to say the same thing. If you're not happy here and I can't fix it, let me help you find something else that
exactly.
You'll love, because life's too short.
Right. And the culture and the camaraderie of the team and the chemistry of the team requires that everybody's on the same page. And we know we're going to grow here. We know clients are going to grow here.
Yeah. I like that. Is there anything that you learned the hard way about leadership?
Yeah, when I first started the business, I hovered a little too much and people accused me of,
micromanagement. Never.
I'm intuitive enough to see the frustration in people's faces and in their actions with that style. And I learned pretty quickly that to back off.
Our media lead, Claire, and I have a book we want to write called How to Delegate But Make Sure It Gets Done the Way You Want. We do not have any pages written for that book, but that's the title. It's hard to delegate and make sure it gets done the way you want and not micromanage. Okay, so again, back to some mistakes. Is there ever a time in the history of Morrison where you felt like walking away?
Not once. Not once. When you have your whole life invested in a business, it's like, do you want to change everything you stand for and everything that you're going to do for the next X number of years? So no. Our accountant many times had said, I should walk away. And you remember her.
I do. She was always concerned with us eating cat food in our retirement. And I never thought that was an option, but she did.
I didn't.
So this is my surprise question for you. You started a company 40 years ago and both of your children work in it. So obviously I'm the CEO and my brother Matt leads our technology discipline. Does it ever scare you that we have so many eggs in one basket? And I'm not asking for I'm proud and I'm not worried, but as a family business, which we are, it could be concerning that three different families' livelihoods are at stake if the agency isn't successful. So do you ever think about that?
No. Not in the least. And because I'm confident in what I've accomplished. I'm confident in what you've accomplished. I'm confident in what Matt's accomplished. And I'm confident in your capabilities. There's no way this would be unsuccessful.
Oh.
I mean,
Matt, are you listening? No, I agree. I do worry about it sometimes just because diversification is always a good thing. But I agree. I think what you've built and the foundation that you provided us has been such an awesome springboard. Okay, you talked a little bit about team culture, and I think over the years, Morrison has always been known for having an amazing culture. It's probably, you know, when we say what to current employees, what do you like best about the agency? They always say the people. Oh, every time. So is there a memory from the last almost 40 years that you still think about and laugh?
Yeah, one of the things we used to do early on, and we did this for many years, was because we felt our people were different and better and easier to work with, and our culture was more energizing than other agencies. And we've heard the same thing from other people, is we used to produce what we called feel-good videos that communicated the personality of the people, the personality of the agency, and the environment we live and work in. And those feel-good videos, everyone was funny, it was fun, they were energizing, and we did one for every new business presentation. We did our standard, you know, brandscapes, we did our PowerPoint presentations, and then we showed the personality of the business in a feel-good video that sometimes had the client's logo on computer screens or in the office and people joking and drinking and having fun.
Yeah.
And those feel-good videos, we have hundreds of them, did a great job of making people feel like a team, making people feel that they're all in this together, and allowing us to project what we stood for to people who interacted with us.
Okay, so to have a great culture, there has to be some consistency in things that we repeat and always do, because over 40 years, you can't have a great culture if you don't do those things. Are there any quote-unquote rules or gut instincts that you live by when it comes to creating a good culture?
Yes. First and foremost is people criteria. And there are six criteria that, for me, are extremely important in our people, and you know what they are. First and foremost is humanness, and that's someone who has a sense of humor that we would enjoy being around, that would be great to have a drink with or lunch with.
I think sometimes people call that getting it. Do they get it?
That's a different issue.
Oh, okay. Dang it, I jumped ahead.
That's a different issue. The whole issue of get it, I think, is important. We used to have years ago on our review forms, you know, what are these this person's areas of concern, future development, what do they do well, what don't they
we
do well?
We call them opportunities for growth now. But go ahead.
Opportunities
it's a softer,
for growth.
Gentler generation.
And at the end of the review form, there was one simple question. Does he/she get it, yes or no? And if you have to check the no box, there's no investment required in that individual.
But we didn't fire them. We were slow to fire them if they didn't get it. No, I'm just kidding. No, I agree. Totally.
So the six criteria, humanness, okay, yep. And I mentioned a little bit about what that was. The next was integrity. People are either people of their word or they're not. We have to entrust confidences in people. The rest of the team has to trust someone. So integrity is extremely important. The next one is brilliance. And I don't mean a Mensa candidate. I don't want somebody that necessarily has a PhD, although we've had plenty of PhDs at the agency. But they've got to be people who are bright. Clients want to interact with bright people. Other agency people want to interact with bright colleagues. Yep. So brilliance to me doesn't mean intelligence as much as it means street smart, brightness.
Yeah.
When I interact with somebody, I want them to respond in a positive, energetic way. All our people are bright. On different levels, but they're all bright.
Yeah.
The next is curiosity. You have to be curious about our clients' business, our clients' marketplaces, the target audience behavior. Curiosity leads to insight. Insight leads to ideas, and that's the business that we're in. If you can't bring me ideas that solve a business problem, you're not worth the money.
And by the way, that's going into the age of AI, still the most important part.
The next is taste. And not taste in the product. We have people.
Not taste in wine.
Not taste in wine. It's taste in how you carry yourself, how you live your life. We know people who are of great taste and those who aren't. We want to be around people that have great taste. And the last is will to win. And will to win is very simply wanting to make something happen of yourself in this business. And if we can't do it at the agency, we'll help you find somewhere to do it. But if somebody has the will to win, we're going to benefit and our clients will benefit. So humanness, integrity, brilliance, curiosity, taste, and will to win are attributes that I question people about and I probe for. So I ask unusual questions. Our talent VP will tell you that, man, you have the strangest questions, but they get people thinking and they talk afterwards about how different the interview was with you.
Yeah.
Because those issues are important to me. Yeah. And I have ways to figure out whether people meet them.
Well, and those traits are all so different but overlapping that they create a well-rounded person. And I like to think about will to win a little bit with a competitive edge. So yes, it's wanting something for yourself, but also really wanting something for your clients. And when we pitch something, really wanting something, really wanting to win a new piece of business, and just having that sort of competitive piece, I think really makes people successful in advertising.
That's very important. I mean, if we don't exceed client expectations, why do they pay us?
Yeah.
I mean, and if you aren't driven to make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. In advertising, being complacent is pretty tough. Okay. Well, the next section I wanted to talk about was sort of your legacy, but also the future. So I've been in the CEO role at Morrison, just not quite 2 years, I think. So what surprised you the most about passing the baton to me? Good answers only.
Well, this shouldn't have been a surprise, but it was a delightful surprise that you got it so quickly.
Well, it's one of the criteria, isn't it?
It is.
Criterion.
Of course, you learn from the best, but...
it's true.
I'm sure you saw some things that you could do better, but you have been, since you took over the role, the complete package. So
thanks.
Aww. I'm proud of that decision, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Well, what do you hope I don't change?
Don't change the people criteria and don't change the culture.
What if I change the name? I'm totally kidding. I'm not changing the name.
No, hire the right people. Consistently exceed client expectations and be profitable. Mm. Three simple ones.
No big deal. I got it. So you said I was the total package, which I totally appreciate. And I, unlike you, 100% have imposter syndrome and don't always feel like I have it all figured out. But what do you think that I brought to the table that's different than your approach? I mean, I'm talking about Be Real, a time where you questioned sort of a way I did something, and then it turned out to be fine because otherwise we're not going to talk about it, but that you were in the moment kind of like, oh, that's probably not how I would have handled it.
You're clearly more sensitive than I am. You're a little more compassionate than I am. I think you align with staff more easily than I do. And I think there are times when you feel more like part of the team and staff more than the leader of the staff, which I don't think is a bad thing. It's just different.
I call it, or when I thought about what kind of leader I would be, it's more of that servant leadership approach.
Right. I would say that's
which
true.
Which I think is much more of a modern leadership approach than when you started the business. No offense,
you're being defensive.
No, it just wasn't a way that people ran companies in the 80s. You know, that's
right.
Just not how it was done. And I think, especially in the advertising industry, people are just more in touch with their emotions about how they're feeling from a outside of work perspective, and they bring it to work. And so I think if we're sensitive to how people are doing collectively in their lives, they're happier at work and they do a better job.
Well, I think that's a good way of putting it. I think you are empathetic of staff and you relate to them very well. And I think they appreciate that.
But so sometimes you question my empathy.
It's a little different than my style because, you know, we got to get shit done here.
Yeah. I can drive a hard bargain. Come on. Okay, so obviously you've been doing what you've been doing a long time and you've gotten really good at it. What is something – think about someone listening to this podcast who's just starting out. What is something you would wish you could whisper to yourself, go back in time, that, you know, you now know, but if you had known it then, would have made a big difference?
I think there are probably three things. First of all, without cash flow, there's no business. So you need cash flow. Without financial management, there's no future. Without great creative, there's no agency. You need cash flow.
No offense, media, technology, account management, project management, research, and strategy. Go ahead.
But it took us a while to get great creative. I mean, I sourced freelance creative for the longest time so I could hire the best creative directors in the country. But to have one on staff full time took a while.
The three things you mentioned are amazing advice for a brand new CEO. But like, what about a college kid who wants to get into this field?
I think being curious about the business, being curious about the company that you're interviewing with, learn something about their clients. If you demonstrate curiosity and you demonstrate knowledge that other people don't have, that's how we win business.
Yeah.
That's how you win a job. That's how you get into the business. And unless you are capable of doing that, you'll never be successful in this business.
I think curiosity is maybe it's one of our traits that we look for in new hires, but I think it's possibly the most important trait as we go forward in our industry because of AI and the fact that AI is sort of available to everyone and, you know, everyone has access to the same information. And if you're not curious and pushing past the expected to bring something new and different to the table, you can't be successful. So I totally agree. And I think that's an evergreen trait for people. Okay. So two more questions for you that are much more broad and philosophical. How do you think the business has changed over the last 40 years? And sort of part two of that is, do you have any predictions about the future?
I don't know that I have any predictions, but I can tell you how it's changed. Fundamentally, it hasn't changed at all. Our responsibility is still to position brands effectively in the minds of a potential customer and then influence their decision-making process. That hasn't changed. Consumer, business to business, the list goes on. What has changed significantly is the way in which you do that and the way and the tools that you use to do that. We are much more sophisticated today. We can talk to customers one-on-one directly, and we can get feedback on whether or not they're engaging with the brand or not. But our responsibility is to build brands and businesses. Hasn't changed. Our responsibility is to connect with customers. That hasn't changed. The tools that we use to do it are very sophisticated today and a lot more cost-effective, and they're measurable.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think that measurability piece is the biggest.
To me, that makes the business much more rewarding and much more predictable because you can track the effectiveness of all the work you do.
Okay. My last question is a question we will ask everyone. Because we are in advertising, what is your favorite TV spot of all time?
I have two favorite TV spots, and I'm sure other people will mention this one, but the Apple 1984 was so outside the box, so breakthrough, so entertaining, told a great story, positioned the brand effectively. I can go on and on. Great spot. It's in the Advertising Hall of Fame. The other one is a little bit different.
And is it when we did?
No.
Dang.
No, but there are ones that we did that I would say should be in the running. But no, I think it's Alka-Seltzer.
Mm. Pop, pop, fizz, fizz.
Well, I think that's a great line, and it works as a tag. But I can't believe I ate the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
How many people have been there? And I happen to know the writer who did that, who passed away a few years ago. He worked for a good friend of ours, Joe Phelps. His name is Howie Cohen. But he wrote the Alka-Seltzer.
I can't believe I ate the whole thing. So and relatable.
Everybody identifies with that. Everybody.
Yeah.
And whenever you say that, the product that comes to mind is Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah.
And the line they remember is?
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Pulled that one out of the memory bank.
Well, so those are the two spots that I think, for me, are the greatest. One because it was so breakthrough, and the other because it tells a perfect story and solves a problem so clearly.
Yeah. If only we could have measured it to see how well it did.
Look at the brand.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, that concludes our first circling back. Do you feel like we circled back enough and reflected enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Is there anything you'd want to add at the end?
I had a great story that I was going to tell, but I might embarrass somebody. This is a funny thing that happened to me when I started out as advertising manager at Black & Decker in Canada. And I got a bunch of invoices from the agency. And as advertising manager, I had to approve them. And I didn't want to approve these large numbers that came in from the agency. So I had all kinds of notes on the invoice. Not paying this, not paying this. Don't know what the hell this is
for. Dream client.
Yeah, don't know what the hell this is for. And put them in the mail. There was a mail strike in Canada. The invoices never got back to the agency. During that time, I negotiated a deal to leave Black & Decker as advertising manager and actually join that agency as account supervisor on the Black & Decker business.
You got your many, own invoices.
Many months later, the president walked into my office with his envelope and said, we have a client problem and I need you to fix it. And I opened it up and they were all mine.
It was your handwriting. That'll serve you right. Client trying to not pay for services.
Right.
Oh, that's funny. No, I was actually going to tell a different story where you were given copy to review. And in the middle of the copy, someone had substituted a paragraph.
Well, no, this was for Anheuser-Busch theme parks, Busch Gardens in Tampa and Busch Gardens in Williamsburg. We were working on the business. And account people are notorious for looking at the copy and just signing off on it and sending it on to the client.
Are
not
they?
Reading. Yes, they are. Not reading line by line, especially if it's a brochure copy. They should be reading it, but they don't, and they just forward it to the client. Well, this writer.
They knew you were.
They knew we were doing that. So he would put in page 4, 5, 6, the F word. He put shit here. He put client's an asshole here. And the client called me one day and said, would you go to page 6, please?
God, that's awful.
The fourth line from the bottom.
No.
Did you really mean to say that?
Did they have a good sense of humor?
Yes, and they knew who the writer was, and they knew what he was trying to do. And but they made me feel very uncomfortable for quite a while.
Oh, that's awful.
I read, and everybody that's ever worked for me has read copy thoroughly from that point forward.
Yeah, see, the mistakes are the ones you learn from the most. Is there anything about having dual citizenship that sort of helped you as you were putting yourself in the mindset of a target audience or, you know, you're Canadian and are a U.S. citizen as well? Is there anything that changed how you worked of that?
I think everybody says Canada is a more gentle society, and I think that's true. So coming from that perspective, I think is valuable. We're more patient. I think Canadians as a whole are more patient, more understanding, a little more soft-spoken. I think, if anything, it was learning to speak a second language. Mm. I speak French, so I think that's valuable.
Do you feel like telling a French-Canadian joke?
Sure.
Okay.
These three French Canadians are arguing about Easter, and the first one says, "Easter, it's when that fat guy in the red suit, he's come down the chimney, he's put gift under the tree." Second guy says, "Stupid ass, grade two education. Easter is not that. Easter is taking place in the fall. Horn of plenty, big turkey on the table, give thanks, family gather around." Third guy says, "You guys are crazy. Easter is different than that. It's a very religious occasion. It's happened in the spring, in April. It's when Jesus was crucified on Friday. Then he was put in the cave. 2 days later, he rose from the dead. As he's coming out of the cave, if he sees a shadow, he goes back again."
I think that we should end on that note. What do you think?
That's fine.
I think that's good. Well, thank you for doing this.
Hey, it's been fun.
It's been fun to circle back with you.
Yeah, it has been.
All right.
Nice to reflect.
Bye.
Bye.
Circling Back is produced by Morrison, recognized by the Atlanta Business Chronicle as one of Atlanta's best places to work. To get in touch or just learn more, visit morrison.agency.